Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, this is Politics Without the Boring Bits. I'm not Matt Chorley. I'm still Patrick Maguire with you till the end of this week. Today, we're asking, why are young men turning right when young women are turning to the left? It's the question that could redefine our politics, and we're going to answer it today. Is it all Andrew Tate's fault? More on that to come. But before then, it's time for a clip from the latest episode of How to Win an Election. Strike up the band.
Before we do some questions that people have been sent in, it seems that Keir Starmer has been listening to the podcast, Peter, because you told him to drop the £28 billion and now he has.
all I know is that it's as well to get ahead of the curve in these matters.
If only he had done.
Get ahead of the curves, just to explore all that unexploded ordnance that's lurking just below the surface and make sure that it's removed before it goes off on in your face in an election campaign.
I mean,
great Mandelson principle.
Fine. He is still going to become Prime Minister at the end of the year, but he only had one policy and now he's dropped it. You know, you might have thought it through a little bit before. I have been in this position, you know, I accept, because the Conservative Party under William Hague advanced the tax guarantee and then realised it wouldn't work. And in those circumstances, the best thing to do is probably to drop it rather than to go into an election doing it. But I think it does raise some questions, which maybe Labour doesn't have to answer to win, but it certainly will have to answer to govern, about what it is that Keir Starmer really thinks. You know, where he is and where his team is. So, you know,
you're not going to come out with "where is the plan, are you?" that Sunak line that he
the reason they've come up with that question is because they clearly know that that's what the focus groups ask. It's Labour's one weakness, the thing that might soften their vote. In, you know, as you know, I think that Labour win the election, I just said, but I do think that if you're the Conservative Party, of course you'll press on that issue, and that exact phrase comes out of focus groups, so of course they press on it. That's just professional campaigning.
It's interesting that, you know, Jeremy Hunt said on Twitter, or whatever it's called, you know, that...
No, he's called Jeremy Hunt.
Today.
But, he said, after however many years in opposition, all Labour can do is copy the Conservative Party on economic policy. You think, well, hang on, isn't that the Keir Starmer line? Danny's right that there is that attack that where's the plan? But I think the Conservative Party, again, is in such a tangle that they've jumbled that up with the only plan you've got is the same as our plan, which is...
No plan
Not
at
really
all.
Really, very
actually.
Scary.
It was the same problem with New Labour, New Danger, the campaign in '97. The Conservative Party could never, you know, was a lot of the time sort of saying the danger is they're copying us, and you think, well, why is that? Why would that be a danger? So you're right. I think for the Conservative Party to land this, they'd have to be quite disciplined. I think actually, to be fair, because I've been very critical of some of the campaign things they've done, like the party conference strategy, they have been pretty relentless about the £28 billion, repeating it over and over again. And Labour has, under this kind of pressure, it has sort of buckled on it. And though by itself this is not enough to change the election result, it doesn't help Keir Starmer's leadership ratings, which are one of the things that matter. I suspect we'll find it's a rounding error. Most people will not have noticed he had the policy. Most people won't notice that he's abandoned it. But it's certainly, you know, it's not the episode of his opposition leadership he'll look back on with the greatest fondness.
In the 1980s, when I started off in this lark, I had a rule.
This business we call show.
Politics, campaigns, how to win an election. I had a rule which said, you know, when something happens to you and some great Tory piece of artillery bombardment opens up in front of you and you're momentarily dazed and confused as to, you know, how to react to it, I said, if in doubt, say nout, but not for long. And Mr. Starmer and his team seem to have applied half that rule. If in doubt, say nout, which is right. You can marshal the facts, you work out what your policy is, make sure it's joined up, and then nimbly articulate it. But if you delay, you'll find yourself dragged halfway around the stadium behind the Tory chariot, you know, before you open your mouth, and it just looks terrible. So I do agree they were right to take their time to sort out the policy. I just think it could have been done a little quicker.
That was a little taster of the latest episode of How to Win an Election. Remember, you can listen to those three experts, Danny Finkelstein, Peter Mandelson and Polly McKenzie, in full wherever you get your podcasts from. Just search How to Win an Election.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.
The big thing. Why are young men turning to the right? Historically, the big divide in politics was class, then it was age, but now might it be gender? The accepted wisdom has always been that the young are more liberal, idealistic, and radical than their parents, becoming inevitably more conservative as they age. It's a concept succinctly explained by none other than the singer-slash-actress Holly Valance at Liz Truss's popular Conservatives launch last week.
Everyone starts off as a lefty and then wakes up at some point after you start either making money, working, trying to run a business, trying to buy a home, and then realise what crap ideas they all are, and then you go to the right.
But new research shows that young men are becoming increasingly conservative, while their female counterparts are becoming more and more progressive. What explains this? Is it social media? And the stars young men follow they're on. Well, Mr. Beast is the most followed YouTuber on the entire platform. He has more than 238 million fans, and his core audience is teenage boys.
I don't really get along with women if like they don't love learning, they're not obsessive, they don't have a hobby, they don't like their job. Like, there are just certain things where if you have these traits, we get along really well.
Yeah.
And if you don't, like, it's impossible for us to hang out.
Meanwhile, Andrew Tate has become notorious for his new brand of modern misogyny. He has a huge male audience.
So I think my sister is her husband's property, yes. When a bride is walking down the aisle to marry the groom, the father walks next to her and gives her away, true or false.
And the podcaster Joe Rogan, perhaps the biggest in the world, has amassed a huge audience urging young men not to become feminists.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of different reasons why men become feminists, and very few of them are good. Creepy little dudes that are trying to get laid, and they're not attractive to women. So They're trying to figure out a way to become attractive to women.
So maybe it's unsurprising that young men are increasingly turning their backs on feminism and progressive left-wing ideas. Here's New Labour mastermind Peter Mandelson talking about this very issue on how to win an election.
Young women, over the last decade, what's developed is a pattern of voting in which young women are more progressive, they've been on a more sort of liberalising journey, perhaps it's a bit of Me Too, I don't know what, they tend towards, you know, the Green Party or whatever. And that young men, particularly young white men, are not on this liberalising journey, you know, in the same way or to the same extent. Indeed, there's a sort of growing tide of resentment amongst young men, and that they're actually leaning more towards, you know, Reform UK. They're going more towards the right. So something is happening amongst young people, and something may be happening between young men as opposed to young women, and it could develop as quite an electoral phenomenon.
So what is behind this phenomenon, as Peter Mandelson puts it, and how significant could it be electorally in the months and years to come? To answer that question, I'm joined by Dr. Alice Evans. She's a visiting fellow at Stanford University and one of the leading researchers on this topic. Good morning, Alice.
Good morning.
So you've coined the term the great gender divergence. What does that mean? And do you recognise some of what Peter Mandelson was saying there about resentment, young men not joining their female counterparts on what he called the great liberalizing journey?
Right. So let me clarify. This gender divide, whereby women are becoming increasingly progressive, as you said, you know, being more concerned about gender and racial bias, this is happening in many countries, whereas young men are increasingly expressing concerns that gains to women's rights come at men's expense. And in many European countries, young men are expressing concerns that immigrants, foreigners, pose a threat to national local culture. So I just wanted to clarify, when we said that young men are becoming more conservative, that's not true in the UK, where young people in general are not voting conservative, especially post-Brexit. So it depends slightly on the questions that we asked. Like, young men expressing what we call, as you said, this modern sexism, this concerns that women's gains are coming at men's expense. So it's not necessarily that they're voting Tory in the UK, just to clarify.
Well, no, when I say conservative, I mean with a small see espousing it makes sense, a sort of small c conservative values. And that's an interesting question to which we'll come, why this isn't necessarily going to find electoral expression at the next general election. Or maybe it will in elections to come. But let's tackle the divergence as it's happening in now. What do you think explains this trend? I mean, you put it pretty succinctly there. Is it a case of identity politics, women's rights are at the forefront of a lot of our cultural debates now, and young men, a certain subset of young men, as Peter Mandelson was saying there, feel frozen out and resentful?
So I think there are three major likely explanations. One about economic stagnation, two about technology and shifts in culture, and then three, the cultural entrepreneurs, whether that's Mr. Beast or Andrew Tate. So perhaps if you and I, first of all, talk about economics.
Mm, let's.
So a lot of A lot of research shows that across Europe and the US, in places where there's been economic stagnation, so rising unemployment, or in Spain where there's lots of temporary employment, or Italy where young men are still 30 and still living with their parents. So young men who are insecure in insecure jobs, unable to get a house of their own, basically unable to achieve status. So if house prices are rocketing and labor markets are crappy, then people tend to have what we call zero-sum mentalities. So this is a paper by Nathan Nunn and others, and they show that in places of economic stagnation, people tend to see the world in this as a fixed basket of goods. And if you, Patrick, take, say, three apples, that means fewer apples for me. So there's this sense of resentment and hostility, so that it's women or foreigners taking stuff that's ours. So it sort of fuels this sense of resentment and angst. So that's the economics. So systematically, in those kinds of economically stagnant places, people are more likely to vote for right-wing parties or express sort of anti-immigrant or anti-female ideas. In places with high unemployment, men are more likely to say that women's gains come at men's expense.
And so we've addressed the economics. What's the next big issue?
Okay, so I think another big issue is technology, and I think there are three aspects here. So over the past 30, 40 years, the media has increasingly highlighted negative things in order to attract viewers. Oh, you've never seen this. You know, look what's happened here. This is terrible. So one is increased negativity. So, for example, if foreigners or immigrants are doing something, that is highlighted because corporations want to attract viewers. Secondly, because people are increasingly on their phones and glued in, any event, any terrorist attack anywhere in Europe can attract viewers, can make German Twitter users adopt the language of the AFD. So because things are so visceral in our faces, that can create the perception of an immediate threat. And then because people see these things, they can self-select into social media filter bubbles where they're hearing all of the same kinds of things. Oh, you know, these immigrants are taking our jobs, or women are doing this, or women are so greedy and grasping. So if you already feel that economic resentment, then you might choose to listen to those kinds of ideas. And then all you're hearing is everyone else agreeing with you. And social media companies do this to please their users, to keep them hooked, and then they send them polarizing content from the other side. Oh, so you never guess what this, you know, radical feminist said. And, you know, she may be a very vocal extremist minority that does not represent women in general, but all these things, all these sensationalizing things create shock and uproar and get clicks. So the sensational stuff gets a lot of clicks. So the technological changes are, one, more negative stuff. Two, you know, stuff from all over the world becomes much more visceral and immediate. And then third, we get sucked into these social media filter bubbles where we're receiving a very blinkered view of the rest of the world and not exposed to debate and contestation.
And that, I assume, is where, as you put it, the technological entrepreneurs come in, your Andrew Tates, your Joe Rogans, your Mr. Beasts. And what I'd like to ask you, though, Alice, the interesting thing there is they are tapping into the social media stuff as an expression of what we first spoke about, which is a real sense of economic alienation in some cases, that the system as it is, the economic and political system, isn't working. And this is a long story of, you know, a shift away from heavy collective industries to a slightly more insecure economy. You know, is it any surprise that people are turning to parties who present very easy and easily understandable answers, even though they're ones with which many people disagree? And how can parties, you know, seize the initiative back from what their critics may call the populist right on this issue, given that they are speaking to very real concerns?
Yes, absolutely. These concerns are real. So, for example, in England, people in their 20s and 30s, it's incredibly tough to get onto the housing ladder unless you're sitting on an enormous wad of inherited wealth, right? So there are very real economic grievances. And if you're in a struggling period, in a struggling time, yes, people may well be swayed by people who claim to, you know, blame the others. It's the fault of those other people. So I was recently in Poland, where Mensen is really popular, and he's very charismatic. He connects to voters, and he has these beer halls talking to young men about their problems and blaming it on mass immigration, like the Ukrainian refugees, for example. And so I think the fundamental issue is the economics, right? Because as long as there is economic stagnation, then people are going to have these zero-sum mentalities of feeling hostile towards others, resenting them for taking our stuff.
Well, and just
and those...
Sorry, Alice, sorry. Just a final thought. You know, given that parties of, you know, you broadly speaking, the left are now sort of having a bit of a nervous breakdown over the extent to which they can respond to that sort of economic resentment on the part of young men, while also sticking to their traditionally liberal views on questions of identity and culture. How easy do you think it will be for parties in future to straddle both of those things?
Right, so that's a great point. And one thing I should clarify is it's not necessarily the case that all young men are expressing their hostility. So young men who are university educated and are thriving in employment, they're doing great and they're more likely to express very liberal gender equal beliefs. But it's especially the men who are struggling and having a tough time. But I also think that when we talk about prediction, we can think about, well, you know, Britain is a democracy and we can do stuff. So if we think that technology is rigging people's perceptions and creating this distorted view of the world subject to, you know, corporate algorithms, that's something that we can change. That's something that we can do something about. You know, we don't need to necessarily think about the after effects of elections, but what we as British citizens can do to change the game.
Well, Dr. Alice Evans, visiting fellow at Stanford University, thanks very much for joining us to take us on a whistle-stop world tour of how young men, some young men, are feeling and turning to the right. Economic resentment, technological advances, and, well, let's be honest, quite charismatic people taking advantage of both of them. Having heard why women and young men are dividing, with young women more likely to support progressive parties in much of the world than young men, what should our politicians do about it? Well, let's bring in the Conservative MP for Don Valley, Nick Fletcher. Hello, Nick.
Morning.
So you've been listening to our discussion today. Do you recognise much of what you've heard about growing resentment among young men, a system they feel doesn't work for them, a sort of prevailing cultural narrative that makes them feel resentful? Do you recognise all of that? And do you think that's behind the sort of divergence we're starting to see in public opinion, particularly in the rest of the world and perhaps soon in Britain too?
I think there's bound to be elements of that there. I mean, in through the King's College survey, 61% of the boys didn't agree with what Andrew Tate had said. So I don't think it's exactly as you've set it out there. But I do genuinely believe that there's been a huge push on feminism, and I think that's been a good thing over this last century. It was obviously needed. And I think it's definitely done the country well and the world well. I think we've seen some fantastic women come forward and do some wonderful things, which is great. But I think over this last sort of 10, 15, 20 years, we've definitely seen working class boys being left behind. And there's been an approach there that boys are all okay and it'll be fine. They'll always do well, and we need to push for girls and for women. And unfortunately, there's a certain cohort of young boys that have been left behind, and they're the ones that I've been particularly spending my time trying to look at, trying to help, trying to find out what has actually gone wrong. And one of the main issues, I believe, has been the lack of male role models for these young boys, and that's why they've taken to people like Andrew Tate. They've needed a role model. They've needed somebody to look up to, and social media has played a huge part in that. And when characters come along like Andrew Tate, that seems to have all the nice clothes, nice cars, and that's somebody that these young boys, and especially young men, look up to, and then that can cause the problems that we do see.
Well, it's interesting you talk about male role models. I've just got a text from listener Scott, who actually references a speech you made in the Commons a while ago. He said, please ask Nick Fletcher if he still blames a female Doctor Who for young men committing crimes. I remember that speech. You were basically making the point you just did now, which is to say there are too few positive role models in what you'd call popular culture on TV screens. And so, as you just said, it's no surprise that people turn to slightly more nefarious quarters. I mean, what do you say to that? Is that a misrepresentation of your views, do you think, or is there a serious point there?
Yeah, I mean, people needed to have listened to the entire speech and what I was saying. I think the best role model that any young person can have, young boy can have, especially is his dad. And we've got 2.6 million separated families out there with 4 million children. 80% of the children will be with mums, and dad often struggles to have that influence on his children. So these young boys do search out for male role models. And what I was trying to say in that speech there is that an awful lot of the typical male role models that you see on TV, which used to do good things and were always the ones to look up to, have been moved away. A lot of these have moved over, and women have taken these roles. And the lots of roles that are out there, reference Peaky Blinders in there, are men that are not particularly living what we call a good life. And that's all I was trying to say in that. We have to be careful. Social media and TV has a huge influence on young people, and we need good male role models for our boys and our young men to look up to aspire to. And that way, if we have these good male role models, then we'll end up with good men in life who actually want to help women, and women will want to help men too. It helps society as a whole. When men do well, women do well. When women do well, men do well. Why wouldn't we want that?
But what does this translate to in policy terms, in concrete policy terms, Nick? I've listened to a lot of what, say, the new Conservatives from your party would be saying on that sort of issue, sort of more family-oriented policies, that sort of thing. You've called for a minister for men. I mean, it's all very well and good talking about this stuff, but what can the Conservative Party do? What can mainstream parties in this country do to stop young men turning off the political process entirely, or, you know, going to parties of the more radical right as they seem to be doing on the continent?
Well, we need to look out for men, just like we look out for women. We've got a women's minister. We've got a minister for women in cabinet too. We've got a women's health strategy. And this Conservative government, through campaigning for myself and many other colleagues over the last few years, are actually moving in the right direction. We've now got a minister, an ambassador for men's health. There's a men's task force coming forward, which is asking why men are not accessing the health system that they should be. So there's positive moves in this way. But I genuinely do believe that we need a minister for men, and we need a men's health strategy, and we need to look how men's role has changed over the last 10, 20, 50 years, and how we can help men cope with that change. And I think there's room for everybody in society. I don't think if men win, women lose, or if women win, men lose. I don't think that's how it should be. As I say, we can think two thoughts at once. We can help women, but how does this affect men? We can help men, how does this affect women? And I think that's just the narrative that we've got to get over there. And we've also got to look for the good in both as well. There will be toxic men out there, there's bound to be, but there'll be toxic women too. What we need to do is we need to speak up, both boys and girls. We need to expect the best of everybody in society. If we continually tell people that they're bad, I mean, there was a survey that said 40% of 16 to 18-year-old boys have been told in school that they're a problem to society. That can't be right, can it? We shouldn't be saying that. We should be expecting the best of our boys and the best of our young men. And that way, we have a happier life for women and girls, and vice versa.
It's really interesting, Nick, looking at some of the texts we're getting about this, because clearly this is an argument, and you say it's a polarising narrative. That really does divide people. I got a text from Eving in Temple, who says this guy is ringing in from 1952. But Beth in Bath says the most impoverished, disadvantaged segment of the society is white working class men. Look at the data, but of course it's not sexy to represent them. As a result, they're being left behind in this woke period we live in, which has zero focus on them. So as you say, it's really interesting how polarising this narrative is. And it does make you think sometimes, is there any way of bridging the divide within mainstream politics, given, as Alice Evans was saying earlier, everything we know about algorithms and social media pushing people to the extremes? Well, let's bring in longtime feminist and Labour peer Diane Hayter, Baroness Hayter. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Do you agree, Diane, with the analysis that as we look forward, that gender in this new sort of slightly more polarised age could become a defining divide as class and age can be?
Well, I hope not, in that I think that what we want is a sort of politics that takes us both forward. I don't think I disagree a lot with your speaker before, that we don't want to see that women getting advance is at men's cost price, nor vice versa. So I hope we can move forward in lockstep. But the problem is that the social media has enabled the culture that has been referred to, which is quite dehumanizing to women. My generation of feminists, and you have to remember, people can't see me, that I'm actually very, very old. But so my generation of feminists, we were all about saying that what we wore and how we dressed and how we did our hair wasn't as important as what we had to give, you know, and what our abilities were. And that was relatively easy in those days. I think the problem with social media, it has reverted to the idea that women's looks are almost the most important, the most noticeable thing about women. So I think social media has a lot to do with that. And unless we deal with that, we will continue what's been growing is a pretty toxic atmosphere about, I'm afraid we have to talk about sex and sexualization of young women. And that sort of divides the genders in a way that my generation of feminism was trying to do the opposite. We were trying to, if you like, be closer to men and not be seen as, you know, two races apart. So I do think there's a challenge, and it is younger women, because that sort of body image is in front of them, that are really feeling the impact on this. So whilst I hear what Nick Fletcher says, that the most disadvantaged group, I think he said, were white working class men, I think he said. Actually, I think it's young women growing up today that have got the biggest challenges against them.
And do you think, Diane, if you drill down into, if one drills down into the polling, the polling is very good for the Labour Party at the minute, but it's quite striking that their support among young men is always lower than it is now among young women. That's an inversion of what we would have seen historically when Labour was the party of, you know, organised labour in collectivised male-heavy industries. Why do you think that is? Why do you think Labour has become a more natural home for female voters than men?
Well, the one of the reasons, of course, is that Labour has, over some years now, been much more active in promoting women's rights at work, and it's concentrating on issues like childcare, but also, the maternity rights, time off to have a baby, and things like that. So, in a sense, we've perhaps concentrated very much on a group that was left behind. In other words, women at the workplace, and therefore we've been seen as very attractive, I think, to women starting out, not just in their careers but in their family life, feeling that there's a bit more potential of wraparound care. So we have, I think, brought women much more into the labour sphere than they were historically. I think the problem about men is that traditionally we sort of relied on very high trade union membership. So the group that Nick has referred to, of white working class men, I don't like that title, but, you know, I understand what he's getting at. They came to Labour via their membership of trade unions, and that was a very active part of their political activity, which then bore fruits in the Labour Party. Unfortunately, Labour trade union membership has declined a lot, partly because there aren't big industries anymore, and for a whole lot of other reasons. So one of the major ways of bringing young men into the labour movement, unfortunately, because of the fall in union membership, has declined, and we've got to make those paths there again.
And just finally, Diane, yes or no, what do you say to Nick's suggestion for a minister to men? Good idea, bad idea?
Bad idea. I think all the other ministers look after men pretty well. I think we should try and see ourselves as people, and actually not divide ourselves. There are, of course, men's health issues, just as there are women's health issues, but that should be for the Department of Health to deal with, and so on. But actually, if we're talking about housing or education, both parents should be involved in those sorts of issues. So I hope we wed more together, and not have someone standing up simply for men.
So there you have it. That's why young men are turning right, just as young women turn left. We'll have much more for you tomorrow, but in the meantime, make sure you like, share, subscribe, and follow wherever you get your podcast from.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.